I believe all of you parents got an email from Kenda letting you know that she's helping with the triathlon today. And I think Luke is there with her, trusting that that's the case. So, and I think there might be some others in our church that are helping out with that today. So, may God bless them and as they're part of the community, pouring into the community. Many of you know we're about to dive into a little mini-series through the book of Psalms. And this will probably take us through the summer. Occasionally you might hear a God story. We're going to hear Sachi and Charles on the 28th and probably some other stories and topics between now and September. But predominantly we're going to be kind of diving into the Psalms. I wonder how many of you love the Psalms. How many? It's your go-to book. How many of you, if you're honest, maybe you don't get the Psalms? Not really. You know, for me, I really didn't understand the Psalms. It wasn't really part of my regular spiritual diet until probably my mid-20s, when I was going through a very difficult time. I was actually moved away on my own. My parents were just going through a divorce. I was a solo pastor in Winnipeg, and maybe that alone will be enough to drive us to the Psalms. I don't know. But in the Psalms, Psalms really provide for many of us a place where we can go and know that we're understood. No matter where we are at in life, we could read a psalm and go, yeah, that fits who I am. There's no wonder why oftentimes we use psalms as part of our corporate worship. Oftentimes liturgy, we read the psalms. In the Psalms, we find some of the most beautiful poetry that depict moments of our spiritual life and our emotional life, our highs and lows. Oftentimes, the Psalms speak directly to our hearts. But other times, we can read the Psalms and we wonder where to put that and wonder how to interpret that or how to read that. I think if we're honest, sometimes the Psalms puzzle us. As followers of Jesus, I think there are Psalms that we don't know what to do with them. They're so raw, they're so honest that we think on this side of the cross that we go, I don't know if that's relevant for who we are as followers of Jesus. You could be reading this most eloquent poetry, drawing us into worship, and all of a sudden the stanza changes within a second and the imagery now is both angry and violent. And again, as followers of Jesus, we don't know what to do with that. Many of you know I've just been working on committing Psalm 139 to memory, and that predominantly that text just so spoke to my heart as I kind of sat with that for 40 days of Lent. It was rich for my soul. But in the middle of that passage is this, an example of this, where all of a sudden the stanza changes and it's angry and violent. Let me read part of this text for you. It's so beautiful. How precious are your thoughts, O God? How vast is the sum of them? Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. When I awake, I'm still with you. If only, God, you would slay the wicked. Away from me, you bloodthirsty. They speak of you with evil intent. Your adversaries misuse your name. Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord? And abhor those who are in rebellion against you? I have nothing but hatred for them. I count them my enemies. And we go, okay, I don't know what to do with that. Out of the blue, is this just this, and it just doesn't seem to fit. Because because as followers of Jesus, we're called to turn the other cheek. We're called to love our enemies. And Jesus would say, if someone asks you, a Roman centurion who is oppressing you, ask you to carry his armor for a mile, carry it for two. So we read this Old Testament passage, and it doesn't seem to fit with how we read the New Testament, how we understand this new kingdom reality. And so for many of us, we bypass the tough parts. We get to those parts of these passages in Psalms and we just skip them because we don't know what to do with them. I have to admit, I came to this part of this text in my memory work and my meditation, and I just put it aside. I had a seminary professor who taught us that when it comes to these tough parts of the Old Testament, especially in the case of the Psalms, that we are to read it through the grid of Jesus. So you read this angry, violent, expressing hatred and emotion, and we go, okay, I don't understand that. It doesn't seem to, so I need to read it through the grid of Jesus and read it through the grid of the Beatitudes. And if it doesn't fit, then we need to understand that something contextual was going on in the Old Testament that is no longer relevant now as a follower of Jesus. And another professor that said, when we read these tough texts where it expresses anger and violence toward our enemies, we need to be reminded now in this new covenant reality because of Jesus that our enemies are not flesh and blood, but are spiritual. And so use these texts as fuel for your praying. And so you're not praying against physical enemies necessarily, you're praying against spiritual enemies. It's an occasion for us to grow in the area of spiritual warfare. I think those are some really good points. But perhaps there's another way to look at these texts. Maybe there's more going on here that God is asking us to grapple with and to be honest with. Maybe the psalmists are moving us toward this stance where we begin to allow God into all areas of our life, no matter how difficult those areas might be. Years ago, back in seminary, I fell in love with the writings of Walter Brueggemann. And he has this helpful little booklet called Praying the Psalms. And what he suggests is that the Psalms reflect two very basic movements in everyone's life. Two movements. And the first movement is that this move into the pit. Life is going well. Everything is making sense. Life is good. And then all of a sudden, we find ourselves in a pit. Tragedy, something unforeseen, out of our control. Maybe it's not even an event, but all of a sudden we find ourselves in a pit. The world collapses around us. We feel now that we're in the deep end. Somehow we've been dropped into a hole. We've sunk deep, and any effort that we give to try to get ourselves out of the hole doesn't seem to work. So the first movement is into the pit. The second is moving out of the pit. The move is where we suddenly find ourselves in a welcomed place. You hang out in there for some time, maybe a few weeks, months, maybe a few years. Some of us have been grieving the loss of a loved one and find years that we spend here grappling with this new reality, transitioning to a new normal, and it sometimes takes years, and all of a sudden, you find yourself in a new place. And life is good. You're no longer in the pit. We see this in Psalm 40. I waited patiently for the Lord. He turned to me and heard my cry. He lifted me out of the slimy pit, out of the mud and mire. He set my feet on a rock, and he gave me a firm place to stand. He put a new song in my mouth, a hymn of praise to our God. Many will see and fear the Lord and put their trust in Him. Many of us relate to that. If Brueggemann is right that there are two movements, that either we are in the pit or we've all of a sudden found ourselves out of the pit, that I wonder where you might find yourself today. But I think we all can relate to this. For those of you who maybe have been in a pit and you, or in the past, or even just recently finding yourselves out of the pit, you relate to the psalmist where you go, yeah, it was not my own doing that got myself lifted out of that dark place, but all of a sudden I found myself in a new reality, that indeed God set my feet upon a rock and made my footsteps firm. I want to just say that there's a popular teaching out there. There's probably some churches in, obviously in the lower mainland, that would teach that God, that when we find ourselves in a pit, that God isn't there. That we actually, as followers of Jesus, because of what Jesus did on the cross and rose from the dead, that despair or struggle or grieving or the unexplained kind of moments where we find ourselves in the pit, that God isn't present there. That as followers of Jesus, we're not called to be there. That in fact, Jesus isn't in the pit with us. He's actually here. And he's asking us, how did you get there? What are you doing down there? He might throw a rope to us, but he's not going to come into the pit. I don't believe that. I don't know what gospel that is, but it's not the gospel that I see in Scripture or understand in my own experience. I think about Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, pressed on every side. Do you think he was in the pit? Do you think he knew the presence of the Father as he was in the garden? I think about Paul's words saying that we are pressed on every side, hard pressed on every side, but not crushed. We are in the pit, and there are things that can happen in our lives where all of a sudden we find ourselves in a very difficult place. I mean, I read 2 Corinthians 1:8, where Scripture says, "We do not want you to be uninformed, brothers and sisters, about the troubles we experienced in the province of Asia. We were under great pressure, far beyond our ability to endure, so that we despaired of life itself." That's the Apostle Paul speaking. Despaired of life itself. This was after the resurrection, and after the day of Pentecost, Paul had these kind of experiences where he found himself in the pit, he found himself in prison, but in that, he knew God's presence. I mean, that's the beautiful thing about Paul. 2 Corinthians 12 says, Paul was glad to boast about his weaknesses. He took pleasure in insults, hardships, persecutions, and troubles because he knew that when he was weak, he was strong. He knew that in his weakness, that he would somehow discover God's strength, and he'd begin to understand and know and live in that new reality of Christ in him, his hope and glory. When I think about God's presence with us in the pit, I think about Psalm 139. Says, "I can never escape from your spirit. I can never get away from your presence. If I go up to the heaven, you are there. And if I make my bed in the depths, you are there." Psalm 139 gives us this hope that God is present with us. He's this great Emmanuel, God with us, even when we are in the pit. So Brueggemann suggests that human beings regularly find themselves in three places. Three places of orientation. So orientation, we're here, life is good, not only do we claim that we trust in God, we actually, that is our natural response. We are in that place of trust and hope and joy. Then there's this place of disorientation. And then reorientation. Orientation, disorientation, or displacement, another word he uses here, and reorientation. Orientation is where everything makes sense in our lives. And it's a good place. We're not to feel bad or that it's somehow shallow when we find ourselves in a place of orientation. Place of disorientation is which we feel like what we've talked about is that we've been sunk into a pit. And then the third is new orientation, which we realize that God has lifted us out of the pit and we're in this new place full of gratitude and awareness about our lives and God's presence. So as we read through the Psalms and as we teach through the Psalms between now and September, this is what I want you to do. I want you to kind of open your mind and your heart to this new way of looking at the Psalms and reading them, is that each Psalm probably fits one of these three categories. And when we are in a place of orientation, we can celebrate that and we can have joy. When we are in a place of disorientation, we can continue to claim these things as true. Not set up camp and think that now this is our new reality forever. We're not resigned here and we don't wear it like a badge of honor and this isn't the place of martyrdom. We can own it. And then there's this place of reorientation, and this is our hope that even if we find ourselves here, that God is faithful, He's present with us, and He will continue to lead us into those new places of life and hope. So the question I have is, where would you find yourself today? Where would you be? Orientation? Disorientation? Reorientation? One thing that the Psalms do is that they invite us to look at our lives realistically. And when you read the Psalms, really there is no room for denial or self-deception. It really forces us to be honest. To embrace this new reality, whatever that might be for us, where we find ourselves in. I think oftentimes when we find ourselves all of a sudden in a place of disorientation, we think, you know what? My goal now is to get back to where I started. Once you find yourself here, is it possible to just get back here? Life as it once was? Is that the goal? There's a song that came to my mind. It's an old song by Keith Green. Listen to the words.
So you want to go back to Egypt, where it's warm and secure. I'm sorry about the one-way ticket when you thought you were sure. You wanted to live in the land of promise, but now it's getting so hard. I'm sorry you're out here in the desert instead of your own backyard. Eating leeks and onions by the night. What breath for dining out in
Now the temptation is, I want to go back to Egypt. Yeah, it was bad. There was that whole slavery bit. But we had all the food we wanted. There were things that and don't we do the same? We find ourselves in this place of disorientation and we believe the lie that somehow I just need to get back to where life made sense. Get back to the old normal. I gave some of you, you'll find this piece of paper on your table. Some of the chairs have it. And it's really good. It's this picture of ourselves when we find ourselves in this place of orientation. There's this, and you could call it the managed life. And in this regard, it's probably something that is a bit negative or shallow. It's defined as, it's focused on how do I look and how do I feel. Everything is going well. Career-wise, family-wise, it's all going well. Managed life. And then all of a sudden comes this place of disorientation. It's called the wounded life. Something happens. Life happens. Struggle. Questions. Things out of our control. We can't put our finger on it. And all of a sudden we find ourselves in a place of disorientation where you don't know which end is up. There are no right answers. There's no easy answers. We find ourselves moving from the managed life into this wounded life. And the temptation is to just get back to the managed life. I just want life to be like it once was. But I think what the Psalms teach us is actually to go deeper, to embrace this new reality of a formed life. To a formed life. Where all of a sudden, wisdom starts to emerge. A life of rest and a life of peace. Deep wisdom. A gentleness. A greater understanding of grace for ourselves and for others. And I think this is where this reorientation, when we come out of that pit, and God has done His work, and we've allowed Him to do His work, there's been surrender, and there's something going on for us in this place, that all of a sudden God lifts us to this place of reorientation, and we go, wow. God, You've done something deep in my heart. You've changed me. There's been a spiritual formation that's gone on in the situation, in the circumstance, and we've emerged with a new formed life. And that takes time. For me, that's the Psalms. The Psalms give us that kind of hope and that kind of perspective. Let me just quickly run through kind of what each of these look like. The orientation, an oriented life, is like the Corona commercial. It's find your beach, right? Only thing with orientation, it's that you don't need to find your beach. You're actually on your beach. You're there. You're reclining. Sun is shining. You've got your favorite beverage at your side. The waves are crashing in. Life is good. Life is good. That's the TV or the electronics company from Korea, right? So maybe it's that commercial. But life is good. You found your beach. Everything makes sense. Everything's settled. There's no doubt. It's a well-ordered world. You don't feel like there's any surprises. There's no fear. And this isn't just a blind trust. This isn't just I'm pulling the wool over my eyes and I'm just pretending. No, this is not pretentious. This is not somehow faking your way through. This is actually you're at a good place. And you not only are just choosing trust, you actually do trust in the Lord. You're at a very healthy place. It's like you're living under this canopy in life where there is no chaos. You're feeling at rest. You identify with the psalm that Jeff read, "Be still and know that I am God." That whatever circumstances are happening, you actually feel at rest. And there are many psalms that kind of fit this category, that fit this piece, that it's an oriented life. It depicts this picture of everything is good and everything makes sense. Now, just like in anything, there can be some liabilities with this stage. What do you think those would be? Every strength has a weakness. There's all of our strengths, all of our lives. We have a shadow side. What's the shadow side to this place? Any ideas? Do we need a mic? Can you shout it out? Not be shy. Any shadow side to this? Shallow. Can be ten. If you live there for an extended period of time, yeah, it's not very deep. At least it doesn't feel deep as far as if you don't know trouble and that these promises of God actually relate to our lives when we're in a deep place, it can seem pretty textbook, right? Yeah, it's a reliance on ourself and not on God and in others. Not going to lean too heavily into community when everything's good. Karen.
There might be an unwillingness to approach unknown pain, unknown suffering, unknown hardship, unknown difficulty, even in yourself, like in your own world, but also in the lives of your community.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a good
player. Yeah. So an inability to approach or to press in or be present to those that are struggling or maybe in a different place. I don't think a person in this stage even knows that there might be that in their own life, but an inability to enter into someone else's pain if they haven't gone there themselves, right? Rob?
Judging others for not being able to manage their life.
Judging others. Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm not there.
Yeah.
I've managed myself.
It's like the book of Job.
Yeah. Yes.
We don't know why you're in the pit. Obviously, it's because you're doing something wrong. Obviously, God has punished you. Obviously, right, there's all this black and white, simple kind of answers to a very complex issue. And we can get to a place of judgment. Must be something that you're doing wrong that you find yourself in a pit. Don't you think it's time to get yourself out of this pit, right? Yeah, we can project those kind of things on people if that's all we know. Anything else?
Pride that you unlock the spiritual evil.
Yeah, yeah. Pride that you've unlocked this new door and you've reached this spiritual stardom and ultra maturity, right? And if everybody else could just be where I am, right? And really that's the book of 1 Corinthians. That's the state of the church in Corinthians, that their spiritual maturity had all these gifts present and there were so much good things going on that Paul had to reprimand them and say, you haven't arrived. Call them on their spiritual pride. So there's some things to guard here. I'm not going to walk through too many what the Psalms are, but what we're going to do when I teach through the Psalms, I'm going to be teaching through a number of Psalms in each of the places of each of the categories or each of the movements. And I won't tell you what Psalm I'm preaching, and at the end of the teaching, I'm going to ask you, so where did that Psalm fit? And you will get prizes. Yep, prizes. And yeah, so we'll be polling everybody what prize you prefer, because chocolate probably won't do for everybody, if we're honest. Second movement is disorientation. Disorientation is this, and the psalmist would often say, you know, what he would assume, okay, God either put me in the pit, or life put me in the pit, or my enemies put me in the pit. It's never that clear, but one thing is clear. They believed that it would only take God. It would take a God thing to get us out of the pit. Their hope was in God. They understood that something outside of my control messed with me, and I found myself in this hard, difficult place. This is a place where you're speechless. I don't know if you've ever been in a place where you are speechless. For me, that's a pretty big deal, because usually I talk a fair bit. But when we get to a place of disorientation, it's a place where we are undone. We are speechless. The answers, the Sunday school answers, just don't cut it. Or oftentimes we just sit with the Lord and we're quiet because we don't have words. I want you to think for a moment, what scenarios in our world or in our lives fit this movement? What scenarios in our world or in our lives presently fit this movement of disorientation? Who might feel like they're in this place on a global perspective? Refugees. Oh, huge, hey? Yeah. Civil war, displaced, leave the home that I love, the country I love. The people affected by the fentanyl crisis in Vancouver, even nurses and the paramedics and the caregivers that are working with, yeah. Maybe even addiction. Yeah. Anybody else?
Homeless.
Yeah. Especially for those maybe in the working poor in our community who all of a sudden their rent has been hiked up and all of a sudden now they're finding they can't make ends meet and now they're going to the food bank. That's really difficult. Some of us know that difficulty. It's really hard. All of a sudden you're in a place of disorientation. Maybe you're 50 and you need to retool for the future and you don't know what to do and what does the future look like and do I go back to school? And there are those in our community that are wrestling with that reality. Think of the identity issues that begins to poke at. Anything else? Yeah, I was going to say mental health issues. Yeah. All of a sudden I'm finding place in it, like the winter that we just came out of. Some of us, that affects our mood, right? Seasonal affective disorder, right? And you're going overboard on the vitamin D and you're just trying to, right, get back to a new normal. You're, right? And it affects your mood and you're finding yourself depressed and, yeah. There's so many scenarios that can fit this place of disorientation. But when we're in this place, we are to own it, but we're also to reflect back. And that's where some of these psalms, Psalm 46 that Jeff read as he prayed, those are important psalms for us to go back to. And that, not that we necessarily feel like they're true, but we go back to them as an anchor point and we say, no, you know what? No matter what I'm feeling, I believe that to be true, but it's not a denial of your present reality. It's not trying to push it down and it's this invitation. The Psalms invite us to embrace the new reality, be honest with where we're at, but then have these anchor points that say, no matter where I'm at, no matter what's going on, and I don't know what's going on, but I trust in God. Some of us are probably saying to ourselves, you know what, when I'm in that place, I don't want to embrace it for fear that I'm going to stay there. And now I'm going to wallow in it and maybe set up camp and resign myself to this new reality that all of a sudden I wear it like a badge and all of a sudden I have this martyr complex that I must be more spiritual than the rest of you because I'm in this deep, dark place. And now we identify with Job. And so we don't want to go there. I don't think that this is inviting us to go there. embracing the new reality isn't resigning yourself to it, it's just being honest. But it's also not denying it. It's not pretending it's not happening. I have a friend, and this goes back to this theology that I kind of poked at a little bit when we started. There's this theology out there as followers of Jesus that because of what Christ did on the cross and rose from the dead, that healing and pain and suffering and all of that isn't part of our life. That God needs to heal everybody because of what he did on the cross and the resurrection. And so there's this difficulty that when hardship comes and we find ourselves in a place of disorientation, that we go, it doesn't make sense. We don't even allow ourselves to be there. We just start claiming the promises as a cover, pretending it's not happening. Because it doesn't fit our theology. It doesn't make sense. So we just kind of, and we pretend. And so if that's kind of where we're at, no wonder the Psalms don't fit. Because the psalmist is the furthest thing from that. I just heard the story of a pastor friend of mine who's, one of his elders' brother is blind in one eye. But when people come to him and say and ask him about his eye, he says, no, God healed me. And people, their first response is, wow, God healed you? Awesome. So you can totally see? And then his wife's like, no, he can't actually. He can only see out of one eye. God hasn't healed him. But then he refuses to admit it. Because the power is in admitting and believing the truth, that it's up to us to believe the truth, because there's this idea that that's what faith is. And so he speaks the truth, speaks what he thinks is what he wants in order to somehow make the healing happen. And it's just, it's a mess. And the Psalms invite us into a different place, a place of embracing reality rather than trying to run from reality, trying to own the fact that God is present in my suffering, that he is with me in the place of disorientation. He is in the pit with me. So maybe you find yourself there, and we're gonna wrap it up. Psalm 139 says, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there, and if I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, and if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me and your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the light become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you. The beautiful promise of this passage is that no matter how dark your pit might be, God is present. And not just present, but actually doing a deep work in the place of darkness. Actually doing a work that only God can do in the place of darkness. So you might find yourself in the pit. Like someone's chucked you in the pit. You are in that place, that wounded part of life. You come here this morning and your life is filled with questions. And why? And your heart sometimes is overcome with despair. And there are no easy answers. The promise is that God is present. Emmanuel, he's with you and he's doing a deep work. I pray that you can take some comfort in that. Some of you are in that place the pit, and some of you are not. Some of you actually have experienced where God sets your feet on a rock, He's made your footsteps firm, that all of a sudden you woke up and you have, it's like you're in a new reality, a new place, and your heart rejoices, and you know that God actually lifted you out of the pit. And so maybe this is an occasion for you to just worship and say, oh God, thank you. But if you find yourself in the pit, you can also take hope that God is in the business of doing that, lifting us up. And maybe you're in a place of orientation. Maybe that's not too much of a comfort for you, thinking, well, yeah, I'm in a place of orientation. Great. Disorientation's coming. Maybe that's not all that encouraging, but no matter what life throws at us, we can know that God is present and near. So praise be to God. Any